Certainly good to be with you this morning. When you show up unannounced, the natural man tried to hide in the back and come listen to some good preaching this morning. In a public way, I just want to thank your pastor and the Lubbock Church and the Littlefield Church and the Mule Jew Church and others represented here for your support of our little group in Canyon. I know those are just words, but it's deeper than that. New little church there, and your support at our annual meeting. I love each one of you so very much, and that's why I'm here, you know, just to for that. Brother Cecil sang a hymn a while ago, In the Refted Rock. And that's kind of a thought that's been on my mind. If we go to 2 Samuel, 2 Samuel 22nd chapter talks some about that. And if somebody asks you a question, who is God? Think about that, because that was asked in the Old Testament. Who is God? Look in 2 Samuel 22nd chapter and the 32nd verse. It starts out, for who is God? Now, I'm not sure how I would answer that, to be very honest with you. The Bible does, in a sense that we can understand, save the Lord, and who is a rock, save our God. That rock, in a term that we can understand here upon this earth, is God. When we understand what that really means, and that rifted rock, we're protected and all of those things. So when we think about God himself, picture that lesson. Now, in order to understand that term in the New Testament, we must understand how it is used in the Old Testament. All Baptists know that. You know, at least 504 times, the Old Testament is quoted in the New Testament. Matter of fact, if you go to Luke 4th chapter, the 18th verse, the very first sermon that Christ preached upon this earth was from Isaiah 61 in the Old Testament. So remember all the New Testament, when they were being quoted, we didn't have the New Testament. They were quoting and learning those lessons from the Old. So when you go to the 16th chapter of Matthew, and so many people outside Old Baptists misunderstand that verse, because Christ also asked a question about who he was. See, in the Old Testament it said, who is God? Well, it's the rock. Christ asked that same question to his disciples. 16th chapter, around the 30th verse, someone there. Who do men say that I, the Son of Man, am? Now, how would I have answered that? You know, I'm glad that he recorded the answer for that. Some say you're John the Baptist. Some say you're Esaias or Jeremiah, so one of the prophets. But then he said, whom say ye that I am? Peter spoke up and said, thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. What did Christ say to Peter? I say unto thee, the singular. So he's talking to Peter right there. And that's where a lot of confusion occurs, I think. He said, flesh and blood hath not revealed that from thee. Thou art Peter. Because he's talking to Peter. But then he said, upon this rock will I build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. Brothers and sisters, Peter is not that rock. Because the question, the subject before that, was about Christ himself, the Son of God. He is the rock. But he was telling Peter, upon that rock he would build his church. You know, Proverbs, the 30th chapter of Proverbs, the 19th verse says, four things that's too wonderful for me to understand. That's how it's stated. The way of an eagle in the air. The way of a serpent upon a rock. The way of a ship upon a sea. And the way of a man with a maid. What does that mean, the way of a serpent upon a rock? Think about the proverb that's teaching us something there. What are we? You know, dust thou art, and dust thou shalt return. You know, that old serpent can crawl through dust and leave a big mark. You can tell exactly where that serpent is upon us. But what about a serpent on a rock? The way of a serpent upon a rock, you can't even tell it was ever there. Has absolutely no effect upon that rock, the serpent does. Christ, even in the Old Testament, is that rock. You know, Psalm 61 is another very beautiful speaking of the rock to me, because we're overwhelmed. I mean, if you're not overwhelmed, you're a better person than I am, because I'm, you know, when our heart is overwhelmed, we're overwhelmed daily. What are we to do? Carry it to that rock that is higher than I? When our heart is overwhelmed, that's where we take it, to that rock that is higher than I. I'm going to go to the book, and I'm not going to spend much time here, just as a thought of introduction, perhaps, and get out of Brother Gale's way. But let's go to the book of Ezekiel. We'll start with the 26th chapter, give you time to find out. Now, don't be afraid of the book of Ezekiel. Now, I kind of still am, but when we understand what the writing meant. Now, when you're around a bunch of smart professors, do you realize that you hear the book of Ezekiel quoted sometime in the college science classroom? Because it's got four faces and a wheel within the wheel. Now, I just know that book of Ezekiel tells us about these little aliens that come down from outer space. That's not what the book of Ezekiel is talking about. When we begin looking at that, Ezekiel was carried into Babylonian captivity. Picture how he wrote this. He'd been in captivity about 5 years when he began to prophesy, and he prophesied for 22 years. But he began to warn. When we start with the book of Ezekiel 1 through chapter 24, that is a warning to God's people. Now, this was all written before those things occurred, but there is a warning there to God's people that if they did not live right, something is going to happen to them, a warning. Now, when we start with verse 34 to 48, we're skipping some in the middle on purpose, that is great blessings that happen to God's people when they do obey. So if you read something that we don't understand in the first part of the book of Ezekiel, remember what that is. There's deep lessons there, but it's warnings to live in a manner that God has expressed. And the last part of that, 34 on to 48, is great blessings. 33rd chapters talks about the fall of Jerusalem. But there's great blessings. What about those middle chapters? What about 25 through about 33? There were seven nations that surrounded Israel, and the Lord permitted them to punish Israel. Now, he didn't cause that. Don't misunderstand. The Lord did not cause Israel to be punished. They brought that on themselves. The Lord did not bring that on them. They brought that on themselves, but he permitted that to happen. Now, what about those nations that did hurt the children of Israel? Let's go to the 26th chapter, because I'm not going to get away from my subject, the rock, and don't get comfortable, Brother Gale, because I won't spend much time here. But here is one the reason we chose out of those seven nations Tyre, because it is the best I can find. It was the wealthiest place upon this earth. It was the strong point. It had more money. Matter of fact, go to 1 Kings, the 9th chapter and 11th verse, and that's easy to remember, just 9:11, you know, 1 Kings 9:11. King Hiram, the king of Tyre, gave, you wonder where Solomon got his wealth? From Tyre, from this very place, because that king gave Solomon all the gold and the silver and the timber that he desired. So that was a great, wealthy place. How did Solomon respond? He gave King Hiram 20 cities in Galilee. Now, you go to John, and it said, you know, can anything good come out of Nazareth? Nothing good can come out of Nazareth. Nazareth was the capital city of Galilee. So here, Solomon said, I'm going to give him something. He gave him 20 cities in Galilee. You know what King Hiram said about that? They pleased him not. What good can come out of Galilee? I mean, he gave him Muleshoe and Littlefield and Lubbock and 20 great cities. They were worthless to him. Nothing good can come out of there, because he already had what he wanted. So where can God's people, what's going to happen there? Let's go ahead and Son of Man, starting with the second verse, 20. Son of Man, because Tyre has said against Jerusalem. Now, I want you to think about something real quick, and I'll not make this too long. if I wanted to prove this King James Bible wrong, if it was my natural goal to prove this wrong, I would go to this chapter. Because this chapter was written in history before those things occurred. Now, there's at least 81 prophecies and more. My counting, it changed about every time. But at least 81 prophecies in this one chapter about what's going to happen. If I can find only one of those that is wrong, this Bible would be wrong. So let's see what he is talking about before it happened. Son of man, because that Tyrus had set against Jerusalem, she is broken that was the gates of the people. Let's go on down to the third verse. Therefore, thus saith the Lord God, behold, I am against thee, Tyrus. If the Lord is against something, who is hurting his people is going to come out on top on that. The Lord was against Tyrus. God's people could do nothing with that wealthy, protected. Picture the United Nations, by the way. This city was a Phoenician city. You hear about the term phonics? That's where they got that. Their record keeping is so great. You can research that battle, which I have, and see the number of casualties, the number taken prison, details of the battle that occurred after the 26th chapter of Ezekiel was written. But it followed right down through what happened on that. I am against thee, Tyrus, and will cause many nations to come up against thee. That's a prophecy, see? What if the first nation that came up against them destroyed the city? It says many nations, the Assyrians did first. Nebuchadnezzar, Babylonian Empire, spent 12 years, almost 13, trying to take that city. You know, then came the Macedonian Empire, and Alexander the Great spent 7 months when he did. But there was nation after nation after nation, many nations to come up against thee. And as the sea causes the waves to come up, and they shall destroy the walls of Tyrus. What if they didn't do that? What if they just starved them out? But the Bible prophesied that the walls would be destroyed, which they were, and break down her high towers. What if they hadn't done that? Can you see the point when we're reading those things? Every one of those prophecies. And I will scrape her dust from her and make her like the top of a rock. That's the point I think I want to make. And I won't go through all of that. If you go to the 27th chapter, you know why Tyrus fell? They started out as a wealthy city like United Nations at the port where the Persian Navy was protecting that place. And each one of the nations had a wall that was on that, the high towers and the walls upon that place. They could not bring it down. And yet it was going to be scraped like the dust, like the top of a rock. 27th chapter says they begin to brag on their beauty. We are of perfect beauty. Read the 27th chapter, and they begin to say, look how pretty we are. The 28th chapter, the next one, if we're control the wealth of the world and we're that pretty, worship us. See the 28th chapter, they begin to say, we're a god. Can you see where man's nature took them? We're making all this money by the works of our own hands. Look how great and pretty we are. Therefore, worship us. See, those three chapters right there, so they went through each one of those steps and were brought down. It tells about the horsemen coming. What if they didn't use horses? And I won't read all of those. From the north. What if they came from the south? See, each one of those, I wouldn't be surprised if Alexander the Great didn't read this and say, oh, I know how to take the city. Of course, he didn't. But this gave the plan. Now, the problem with that, the great fortress that they had, and you can go to 2 Samuel 22nd verse, in 18th chapter of Psalms, the second verse, it talks about the most powerful place that man had at that time. But I want you to look how in the world did Alexander the Great take it in 7 months when 13 years earlier, Babylon could not take it? See, there was a fortress island out there that was so protected, the walls were so tall that they could not take it. The mighty armies of this earth couldn't. And yet the Lord said it was going to fall. Look around behind and see all that rubble. You'd taken the shore part of that. he began to look. It's about a half mile out to that island. And he began to take all that rubble and put it into the sea, just like the Bible said it would, scraping all that dust and building a causeway out to that island, just like the Bible says. You know, there was just enough dust, just enough rubble to reach out there, and then they had a land bridge that could take it. The spiritual biblical point to me is this. The richest place upon this earth, the work of man's hands in that whole area, where is it? It's out of sight. It's dumped into the ocean. What's left? The rock. You know, the works of man's hands is gone. It's out of sight. And yet, it's the rock, just scraped like the top of a rock. All those chapters give a lot of detail about how that happened. But our mighty works, the works of our hands, is gone. It's as dust. It's worthless. But the rock is still there. You know that cleft of the rock? If you go to Exodus 33rd chapter of Exodus, around the 22nd verse, you'll see that God placed Moses in the cleft of the rock and covered him there with his hands. Now, Moses didn't put himself in there. No works of Moses' hand that did that. God placed him there and covered him there with his hands. Now, when God had passed by, he removed his hand and showed Moses something. The hinder part. What does that mean? I think that's where Moses got creation, the book of Genesis. Where did he learn that? When Moses wrote that, God had showed Moses where he had been already, that he had passed, protected in that cleft of the rock. You know, if you try to put yourself in the cleft of the rock, go to the book of Obadiah, and you'll see where they did that. The book of Obadiah, if you want to read about Esau, Jacob have I loved and Esau have I hated, that's an easy book for me to remember, because spell it, O-B-A-D, Obadiah, Esau. See, that's about what happened to him. They placed themselves, the book of Obadiah, it's just one chapter, but about the third verse or so, they placed themselves in the cleft of the rock and thought they were protected, but the Lord brought them down. See, the works of our hands, we think we're secure, but our own works, but we never are. It's always the Lord that is our rock and that has protected us. Come on, Brother Gale, there's so much more about that. When you think of the rock, though, think of that's what God is. Strong, you know, that high tower, all of that has been brought down, that you read about, the strongest part, the richest thing that man can do, if the Lord will, and he does, protect his people. Please come ahead.